more here, Mrs. Gutch. I understand that you've asked to speak on behalf of your son. You may do so.
Yes.
You'll notice those lights in front of you.
Yes.
That gives
yes.
you an idea of how much time you have left. I believe
yes.
that you have 10 minutes
yes.
total time. So
yes.
you may begin.
Okay, Honorable Court. This case deals with the immunity of a deceased United States Allied Forces member of Berlin who was only within the jurisdiction of the United States government's representative in Berlin, the United States sector commandant. The unconditional surrender of Germany and the assumption of supreme authority in Germany by the governments of the Allies in 1945 constitutes an express waiver of sovereign immunity concerning Germany, and that in any matter of Allied jurisdiction in occupied Berlin, including this particular jurisdiction in this particular case. The Allied assumption of supreme authority, it is true, was overall and sweeping, and United States case law has so far demanded express waiver of sovereign immunity to be explicit subjection to United States jurisdiction. But FSI case law has been shaped with respect to sovereign states, that is, cases lacking previous U.S. assumption of supreme authority in the region or in the case concerned. In other words, where you have already supreme authority, you have the most possible, the biggest authority possible. You have it from the start, and sovereignty need not be removed anymore. It is already given. The sovereignty of the state concerned need not be removed. United States sovereignty is already given. Further, the occupier is, during the time of the occupation, the only legal government in the occupied territory. In other words, the Allied Kommandantur was the German government in occupied Berlin. And Allied Kommandantur Law No. 7 explicitly subjects Germany to United States or to the appropriate sector commandant's jurisdiction whenever a United States Allied Forces member is concerned. I would like to draw the attention to the Convention on Relations between the Three Powers and the Federal Republic of Germany, which came into effect on 5 May 1955, and in which the three Western Allies retained in Article 2 the rights and the responsibilities heretofore exercised or held by them relating to Berlin. And they provided in Article 9.3 that the rights of the Allies in Berlin could not be disputed in any court. The new Federal Republic of Germany is bound to this treaty, which it signed as Old Federal Republic Germany in 1955, because the rights the new Germany acquired the full sovereignty only in 1990. So whatever happened between 55 and 1990. Is of course subjected to this convention signed in 1955 by the old Federal Republic of Germany. The right of the appellant to complain here in the United States arises from the Alien Tort Claims Act. And the Alien Tort Claims Act is fulfilled in its two.
On the jurisdictional issue, how do you deal with the proposition that jurisdiction is determined as of the time the suit is brought?
I didn't quite, Your Honor.
How do you deal with the rule from the Supreme Court that jurisdiction is determined as of the time the suit is brought?
Yes, okay.
Which
you
is
mean
2005,
the jurisdiction here?
As I understand
yeah.
it.
Yes. Well, the thing is, during occupation times until 1990, this paragraph says there is no way of disputing Allied rights in any court. That is, Allied rights in Berlin are Allied rights. There is Allied Kommandantur jurisdiction, and of course the jurisdiction on the Allied forces, which is only with the appropriate sector commandant. If it is a U.S. Allied forces member, it is with the U.S. Sector commandant in Berlin. Okay, that is his jurisdiction. So this means, of course, this paragraph actually was meant for Germany because the Allies themselves, of course, won't try to dispute their rights that they have already, which are the highest rights you can have. They won't dispute them in court. They won't go to court and dispute them. Germany might want, in the course of the occupation, to try to find a loophole and dispute them. Okay, now, the sector commander doesn't exist anymore. The occupation is terminated. So the question is, maybe during occupation times, there were no other courts who could take a case, a Berlin case with occupation rights. But this court ruled, of course, in 1981 that it affirmed the rights. There was a case in 1981 before these courts affirming Allied rights in Berlin. The authority who had the rights.
The question for us, I think, is not what were Allied rights in Berlin. It's a more basic question. You have sued Germany, right?
Yes.
Trying to get relief from Germany.
Yes.
And there's only one way to do that, and you have to do that under the Federal Sovereign Immunity Act. And I think Judge Williams' question goes to the point when you filed your lawsuit, it was against Germany. Germany was the sovereign country for whom you filed your lawsuit.
Yes.
You need to show us where, under the Federal Sovereign Immunity Act, you're allowed to bring a suit against Germany that we can hear. So what is the international? One way you can do that is to show that there's an international agreement.
Yes.
By which Germany agrees to be sued in our court. What international agreement is that, and what language can you point to show
Yes,
us?
All right. Well, there is, for example, this convention of 5 May 55 between the Allies.
And does that say that Germany can be sued in United States courts? Does it say that?
No, it does not say that, but Germany was not sovereign then. You see, the sovereignty was with the United States. And if you are already sovereign, and the United States was sovereign and is sovereign in this respect.
But I think, as Judge Williams pointed, our Supreme Court has told us that we're supposed to look at the date that the suit is filed. And on the date that the suit is filed, Germany who you've
sued. Oh, I see, yes.
Who you've sued.
But it is a retroactive matter.
It would only be retroactive if at the time that they took over again, they somehow declared we can be sued going forward. There's nothing you can point to indicate that Germany, the Germany now that you are suing, agreed that for all times in the future they could be sued in the United States on certain kinds of claims.
Yeah, but in the 2+4 settlement, the Allies is not just the United States, it's four Allies. You know, the Russian Allies, for example, as well. The Allies only gave sovereignty to Germany with respect to the future.
Right. So and we're in the future now.
Yes.
So where did Germany agree that in this future they could be sued in the United States?
Yes, but here Germany sues backwards, so to speak, a United States Allied Forces member. And there is no legal possibility for that in Germany.
Well, they seem to think otherwise.
Yes, but I mean, they had to declare the Allied Kommandantur laws as not important or
so
not.
It's very rare that our courts would come in and overturn a judgment of a foreign state.
Yes.
So starting out, that's a very difficult position. We don't reverse a determination by a foreign state, except in very unusual circumstances. And you have to point us to something that says clearly the new Germany has decided this case against you. It would be extraordinary for us to come in and say their measure of the law is wrong and we are going to take the case unless you can point us to something. And that's the problem that you face, the jurisdictional problem. We can't bring another foreign state before our courts without some explicit understanding that they have waived their right to avoid our courts.
So a formerly occupied state can then retroactively sort of rule against things the occupation power has done formally?
Unless they've agreed to take it forward, yeah. I think there are all kinds of judgments made by other countries that we might not agree with, but we can't, as a court, second guess them. Mm-hmm. You're talking about what seems unfair, and we understand that. We're talking about whether we have the authority to hear your case.
Yes.
That's a different question.
I believe your time is up.
Yes.
Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you very much.
We'll hear from opposing counsel.
May it please the court, Jeffrey Harris for the Federal Republic of Germany. Very briefly, the facts that gave rise to this case, Mr. Gutsch's father, Dr. Cobray, was a member of the U.S. Armed Forces and remained in Germany after 1955 and practiced law in Germany. The German government claimed that he failed to pay taxes and sued him both criminally and civilly. The cases against Dr. Cobray, Mr. Gutsch's father, worked their way through the German courts. Dr. Cobray died in 1989. His son took up the cause. And both the criminal case and the civil cases went to final judgment with judgments against Dr. Cobray stating that he owed taxes. Thereafter, he appealed to the European Commission on Human Rights, which found that there was no violation of due process according to their standards. In 2005, Mr. Gutsch brought this case and claimed that that there was, under the Foreign Sovereign Immunities Act, that several exceptions were applicable which allowed Germany to be sued here. In his brief before this court, he limited his arguments to the treaty exception and to the exception for that involved waiver. As to the treaty exception, as this court knows, in order for the treaty exception to apply, there has to be a treaty in force at the time the Foreign Sovereign Immunities Act was enacted in 76, which specifically and explicitly conflicted with the Foreign Sovereign Immunities Act grant of immunity. And there is none to which Mr. Gutsch points, and Judge Urbina, in his opinion, found none likewise. As to the waiver argument, there are two parts to the waiver exception, the explicit exception and the implied waiver. As to the explicit waiver exception, there are generally recognized three situations in which a waiver may occur explicitly, and that's where a country agrees to arbitration in another country. That didn't happen here. The second is where the foreign state agrees that the laws of another country will govern a contract. That did not occur here. And the third is when a foreign state files a responsive pleading without raising the immunity defense. And likewise, that did not happen here, as Germany did raise the defense in its first pleading before the district court. Hence, there really is no case to be made, as Judge Urbina concluded, for finding any kind of explicit waiver of immunity. Implied waivers of immunity are not favored in the law, and here there was none. Mr. Gutsch does not point to any implied waiver other than as I best can understand it, this theory that the surrender in 1945 to the Allies somehow was an implied waiver of sovereign immunity. As Judge Williams points out, the jurisdictional inquiry for this case is made in 2005, not in 1945. And therefore, there really can be no argument that there was any kind of implied waiver of sovereign immunity. So our argument before the district court and our argument in the brief before this court is relatively straightforward, that Germany enjoys the immunity granted it under the Foreign Sovereign Immunities Act, and there is no exception which is applicable in this case which would deprive Germany of its immunity. Mr. Gutsch has argued in his briefs that factually the factual determinations made in Germany are wrong, namely that his father ceased to be a member of the U.S. Armed Forces and therefore was entitled to the protection against taxation by Germany. But those facts aren't before this court. They weren't before the district court because the threshold issue of immunity was not reached. The second thing that is Judge Urbina decided, and is mentioned in Mr. Gutsch's brief, is the issue of the service of process on the Federal Republic of Germany. Mr. Gutsch conceded below that the service was improper and asked the court below, asked Judge Urbina to grant him leave to perfect service. Judge Urbina concluded that he would not do that because he found clearly that there was no, excuse me, no jurisdiction. And hence, in terms of judicial economy the necessity for going through that process, Judge Urbina's decision was both judicious and correct. Unless there are any questions, I would surrender back the balance of my time.
I just have one question out of curiosity. Your brief notes that the plaintiff was liable on the his father's tax liability because he accepted the inheritance. Was the just curiosity, was the inheritance large enough to cover the tax liability?
You know, actually, I was thinking about that this morning on the way over, and I don't know the answer to that, but I do know that Germany did collect, through levies on the judgment, substantial sums of money, and if those judgments were reversed and that money could be returned to the Gutsch family, I think there would have been significant assets. So I don't believe there were assets over and above the judgment of any significance.
No, I see that, but that doesn't quite respond to my question. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mrs. Gutsch, have any time? Mrs. Gutsch, is there anything you'd like to say in response to what the opposing counsel said?
Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. The case is. Thank you.